ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey folks, I'm Erin Park, host of the podcast series Expanse, Nowhere Man. A quarter of a century after he deliberately disappeared into the Great Sandy Desert, American Robert Baggucci is coming back for the first time. It turns out there's unfinished business that needs to be resolved.
I really don't think they understood.
We've got a lot of people missing.
Be careful.
It remains a mystery.
You can binge all episodes now of Expanse, Nowhere Man.
Josh Burns is a bit of a rising star in the Australian Labor Party. The member for McNamara has, in the last few years in particular, been an increasing presence in the party, unafraid to front a microphone or a camera. He's seen as part of the new generation for Labor, but is he pushing for change in the background, or is he biting his tongue and working within the system? And while Josh Burns says he never wanted to be known as a Jewish MP, it has become a defining feature of his political identity. So how does that sit with him? And what does Josh Burns want you to know about him? In the final sitting week of 2025, I sat down with the MP to talk about fatherhood, identity, and what he's learned about the best pathway for making change. And just a really important note to acknowledge, this was recorded before the devastating events in Bondi that targeted Jewish Australians on December the 14th. Welcome to Politics Now, the interview, Josh Burns.
Patricia.
Who is Josh Burns?
You know, it's a funny question to ask, and people think politicians love talking about themselves, but it's not really the case.
Oh, come on.
I'm someone who feels very lucky to be in this position. I feel very lucky to be the member for McNamara, and I feel like this is a really amazing opportunity that I've got to serve my community. And, you know, the things I love is my, you know, my daughter, my partner. We're expecting a baby. I feel very lucky about that. And my community. And I like playing basketball. I'm just someone who cares a lot about our community and understands the power of government. My grandparents all came from different countries.
Because of the sacrifices of those who came before me. It is the lessons from each of my grandparents, Jerry, Dinah, Herschel and Gerda, that guide my policy ambitions in this place.
The combination of their stories are people who left school at 13, people who fled persecution. You know, all of them ended up in my electorate, actually. And so I understand what government can mean for families and communities and migrants. And I'm someone who is the product of all of that. So I feel very grateful to have, you know, to be an Australian, to have been the product of policies made by this building and the building down the road. And I feel very grateful to be in this position now where I can help contribute to it.
So why politics?
Well, it's the biggest show in town, and it's the most important conversation that helps shape our nation and that helps shape our communities and our society. And I feel like I have something to offer that.
You feel like you've got something to offer it. What's that?
I mean, Patricia, I think the values of caring about your community and understanding the rights that actually help shape our life here in Australia, the rights of freedom of religion, freedom to be who you are, freedom to have your own identity, is something that I understand deeply and that I will fiercely protect. The values of creating opportunity and aspiration for people. I think the way in which we also practice politics is really important. And often the national debate on really important issues is hijacked by people who are seeking to divide, seeking to calculate how we do things and the manner in which we do it. And I think if I ever get to the point in which people think that's really what I'm about and that I'm here to do things in order to create division and use politics as a means to create division, then people should tell me to step away. And it's really not. I'm in this because I care deeply about it. You have to make a lot of sacrifices to do this job. And I really care about being a good representative and to do a good job for my community and to try and help shape some of the really important policies that this building decides on.
So you talk about policies broadly, but Josh, because of the Israel-Gaza war, you have been in the centre of a lot of conversations because of an attack on your office, for instance, and have become overwhelmingly known as a Jewish MP. Your identity has been at the centre of so much coverage. How does that land on you?
You know, I mean, being Jewish is something I'm very proud of, and it's it's intrinsically part of my identity. But I never really set out to be the Jewish MP.
PK. I thought that.
Yeah, I never. I mean, it wasn't something that I wanted to sort of make a central part of my identity. Not because I feel like I've got something to hide, but because I feel like being the representative of a big community means that I've got to represent all people, and there's all different challenges that are shared across the community. And I am privileged to represent a large Jewish community, but it's not my only part of my job. So, yeah, I think.
So does it sit uncomfortably with you sometimes?
I think it forces you to step into places that you wouldn't choose to, other than a sense of responsibility and obligation, that you feel like, okay, I have to do this. I have to be the person who enters in this conversation, partly because I want to help shape it, but partly also because I feel like a group of people really need representation. And so, you know, like, what does that mean? It means, now, if you are talking about something as difficult as the conflict and the, you know, the devastating last couple of years, you know, you try and do it in a way that A, gives voice to people I represent, but also makes people understand that actually being Jewish doesn't necessarily mean all of the assumptions that people have, and that one of the things I think we really need is people from all sides of conflicts and communities. And as soon as you take a side, you've already lost. You know, actually, there's a lot more things that unite us, and that there can be a humanity that actually binds us. And I felt my responsibility as a Jewish person in this national debate was also to be something that didn't exacerbate division, but also tried to express empathy across what would traditionally be fault lines and what people seek to make divisions out of.
Some parts of your community, not all, but some parts, have been very critical of the Albanese government and on these issues.
And of me as well.
That's why I want to ask.
Yeah.
How is that must hurt? Like, if you're in a minority group and some members of that minority group are targeting you, that must hurt.
Hurts more than anything, Patricia. It's like arguing with your family, you know, and the emotions and the, you know, the sort of foundations of being in a situation where you, you know, where you are having difficult circumstances with people you love is a really hard thing. But
and has that happened in your own family even?
Oh, a little bit, you know, a little bit where it hasn't been easy, and that people, you know, wanted me to do X or wanted me to do Y, and or felt like I wasn't doing enough of this or I was doing too much of that. And, you know, that's kind of part and parcel with it. I think the hardest thing for my family also was, you know, when you see, you know, like they don't see me as anything other than Josh and, you know, the guy who's cracks bad jokes at the family functions. But when you see me in the middle of some of the potentially dangerous aspects of what happened over the last couple of years, I think it rocked them. And I think that creates stress and pressure, and people don't really know how to place that. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say it hasn't been really difficult. But I also, you know, I think in all of those circumstances, you know, everyone who I'm sure everyone who's listening and can think of circumstances in their own life where they've had pressure or they've had difficulty. And in those moments, you kind of have to decide where you want to go. And you just try and hold on to who you are in those moments.
If you weren't a politician, Josh Burns, who would you be right now?
Well, I was toying up between teaching and politics. I worked in schools when I was in university, and I have so much admiration for teachers. You know, I worked as a teacher's aide during university, and I used to work in classrooms where specifically I used to do work with kids who had hearing difficulties. So they missed sort of some of the, you know, the conversations and the social cues that were going on around them. But what I actually saw was teachers thinking about 21 different lessons at once, and teachers thinking about where each kid was at that particular moment in time. And then on top of that, dealing with the emotional regulation of 21 different students and doing that for, you know, 7 hours in a day and thinking about each person's growth and caring about it. I mean, that is a huge responsibility and one that I have a deep admiration for. So maybe teaching. I really respect teachers.
When did you realize you wanted to be a politician? Be honest.
Oh, I always wanted to work in politics. I studied politics at university. I find it so fascinating, and I love history. I'm a student of politics and history, but I think when when the opportunity came to put my hand up to be the member for McNamara, I wasn't actually in the initial sort of next generation conversations locally. And then the person who I was supporting to replace my predecessor, Michael Danby, said to me, he's actually not going to do it. And if I want to have that chance, he'd support me. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, there's not many opportunities you get to try, and I'll regret it for the rest of my life if I don't take this opportunity. It might not happen, but it did, and I've been elected 3 times, and I feel very grateful for that.
Who do you look up to?
This sounds really silly, but I have a 7-year-old daughter, and she is incredible. And the way she's so kind, and she's so thoughtful, and she's not clouded by a lot of the decisions and the sort of stuff that fills all of our minds. She just looks at people of who they are and how they treat her and her little world. And she's kind and generous and just wants people to get along. And she's a bit of a hero of mine. And then, yeah, obviously my family, my grandparents, my parents, they were all big influences on my life. And I think just the people who are close to you are the people you really admire.
How about your political heroes?
Well, I was a staff member in the Gillard government,
and
I've gotten to know Julia Gillard a little bit, and I find her to be so down to earth and so humble and so thoughtful. And I really, you know, there was obviously difficult days in government, but I think the way she tried to use government to get reform through to change people's life, her reform on education around trying to have needs-based funding in schools, and then also, you know, in the most pressurized days of government to introduce the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which is, you know, a huge part of government now. You couldn't imagine it without it, was pretty extraordinary. And I did work for Daniel Andrews as well. I got to know Daniel.
Ask you about that. I'm glad, because it was just actually James Packer recently who had a bit of a go at Daniel Andrews. And Daniel Andrews is disliked by a lot of people in Victoria, not universally, but there is a very strong feeling about him. You don't find those critiques fair?
Oh, wow, man. I won't sort of give credit to what Mr. Packer said, but I would say, you know, my impressions of Daniel, I got to work with him basically, you know, every single day. And one of the things I found incredible about Daniel was that there's so much noise around in politics, and there's so many things that are, you know, that there's often people who are trying to tear you down at the same time as you're trying to get reform through, and all of the normal stuff and the, you know, and some of the public commentary and criticism. I mean, he's a person. He has 3 kids who he absolutely adores. He has, you know, Kath who he adores, and he's a normal person. He's got a great sense of humour, but he came to work sifting through all the noise and honed in on what he thought needed to happen. And you know, he cut out the bull crap. You know, he was the best at that I've ever seen. And when we were doing things like question time prep, Daniel would practice, and he would, you know, he was humble about that. And he also would give answers that showed he really understood the crux of what politics was and what the issue was. And so I think he was someone who showed me you can't sweat every bit of noise around you. You have to think about what's important, what do you need to get done, and how do you move through that. And, you know, inevitably when you make significant change and when you use politics to get big reform through, people won't like it because change is difficult. But Daniel was not afraid or not intimidated by that, and he stepped up even in difficult times, which I also really admire.
So what do you think about the anger towards leaders like that? I mean, you're a Melburnian. You know how long and harsh some of those COVID measures were. With the benefit of hindsight, do you understand why people feel angry?
Of course. You know, I was stressed by them.
Were you angry ever?
Oh, like, I think everyone was
Josh,
like,
do you
angry.
Ever get angry?
Everyone gets, I get stressed, you know,
do you?
I do get stressed. Yeah,
no,
of course
I'm just
I do.
Saying because we've interacted a lot. I speak to a lot of politicians.
Yeah.
You've never kind of lost your cool, not with me.
I think my media advisor would be very happy that I haven't lost my cool with you, PK.
Well, yeah, other politicians lose their cool.
Yeah. Look, I think, well, going back to your question, I think everyone was really stressed. And in the benefit of hindsight, you know, would we have done things differently? Sure. But I remember at the time, and this is partly why you sort of get into politics, is that, like, what's your role, whether it's in COVID, whether it's in a divisive conversation about the Middle East, whether it's in a national election campaign, whatever these big things that are going on around you, you have to think about, well, what's your role? What can I do? And what can I control? And at that time, I felt like the best thing I could do is there were lots of things that, you know, may not have made sense to me, but, like, what does my community actually need? And I can use politics as a way of ripping that division apart and putting big fault lines into society, or I can just try and help. And sometimes you need to have honest and critical conversations in politics, and I've probably been guilty of that too. But, you know, we all have a role, and that was something I tried to focus on.
What's your red line, a principle or a value you refuse to compromise on?
So this is one thing I find really hard about doing this job, is that the logistical challenges of being in Parliament as a federal member of Parliament is really hard. You're in Canberra a third of the year and people think, oh, you know, that must be fun. And it is the hardest part of my job, being away from my home. And so when I'm at home, sometimes, you know, I'm on school pickup or I'm on school drop off. And that means I can't do some community thing, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. And that to me is something I've learned not to compromise on. Is that I really want to be, you know, I really want to be there at those moments. And I did this leadership course with the McKinnon Institute, who are an amazing political institution, and they make you ask really difficult questions, like, you know, you think about all the sacrifices you have to make in politics, and you have to ask yourself, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth putting all this pressure on your family, putting all this pressure on, you know, on people around you, not spending time with your kids, not spending time at home, asking people to do things for you, to look after my ridiculous dog Larry, you know, all of the things extra pressure you put on the people around you, is it worth it? So I think in the moments where I do have some bit of control, to not compromise on actually being there for, you know, my family, my daughter, and that's something I'm my beautiful partner's about to have a baby, and it's something I'm really thinking about right now, of how am I going to manage this next year. And I'm loving my roles right now in housing, and I also I'm chairing a committee and serving my community. How do I manage that without compromising on missing out on the people and the times with people I love?
Women often have to work on that. I don't hear men talk about it much, but are you thinking about it in those terms? I mean, have you borrowed What Happens to Us, which is an entire crisis about how we're going to manage that?
Well, it's funny you say that. So Georgie, my partner, is obviously, she's a member of Parliament in Victoria. Mm-hmm. She's also got an election next year. So she's going in November, going to a state election to try and get re-elected. And I want to obviously support her. And that was a big part of our conversations of, can we do this? And I will be doing a lot of looking after our beautiful daughter, and I will be making sure that I can help support Georgie be a member of Parliament too. And this is not her responsibility. It's ours. And I'm stressed about how I'm going to manage it, because
it's stressful.
It's really hard, and I don't know how I'm going to fit it all in. But I also know that this part of the deal, and Georgie and I have spoken about this, is that it's not mum's responsibility. And I'll have to find a way to make it work. And
you're working on that at the moment.
I am. Yeah. I think inevitably I'll take some time off Parliament, and I'll be a dad, full time dad.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
What's the vibe with that? How do you do that? Have you spoken to anyone about it?
Yeah, yes, and
tell me more.
By
the time we do share this long form conversation, it'll be summer. You might actually, knowing about your timing, I don't reveal anything, but there might be actually a baby out, right?
Yeah, which is very exciting.
Spending a lot of time attached to the mum at the start, but pretty quickly being shared a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, there are obviously processes. You can get leave from Parliament, and there's sort of technical stuff, but really it's about ensuring that my colleagues know that I obviously am still serious about my job, and I have responsibilities that I really love, including being the Special Envoy for Housing, public social housing and homelessness, which is the job that Prime Minister gave me, which I've done a lot of work on, and I want to keep working on. And I chair the Public Accounts and Audit Committee as well. They're both jobs I actually really like, and I feel yeah, I've got more to do in both of those areas. But it was part of my first conversation I had with the Prime Minister when I went and told him, actually, Georgie's pregnant and I'm going to talk about this in a way that will hopefully put out there that as a bloke in politics, it needs to be possible for me to have a kid and for that not to just be my partner's responsibility. So, and he was really good about it. He actually, he spoke about how he had a similar experience. He actually had a state member of parliament who,
Carmel Tebbutt was his partner and they're no longer together, but of course she was member of the New South Wales government.
Yeah, that's right. And he was really generous with me, actually, I have to say, about saying that, you know, he did find it really hard, but he wants to, you know, he understands that the sort of parliament we want to be a part of is one that helps make things possible. And when you have younger people in this place and representing communities around the country, which we do have a lot more parents and younger people and people in the younger generations, it's not just 60-year-old blokes anymore, which is a wonderful thing, to have more differences in representation, I think that comes with also finding ways to make it possible. I mean, one of the things I would like to do also is when my daughter is old enough to bring her here and try and make it work around this building.
I remember Anthony Albanese as a much more junior member of a Labor opposition many years ago, and his son Nathan would come into Parliament with him, bring him up. So he actually was an early adopter of that kind of life.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a private conversation and obviously he's the Prime Minister, but I would say, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but
I doubt it.
I would say that from that conversation, I was extremely grateful that he was very generous and very encouraging and really recognised that, that as, you know, as a dad, it's something that you don't want to miss out on your kid's world and your kid's life and being a father. And I know he takes that part of his life extremely seriously. He loves Nathan and of course, Nathan's a great guy, but he loves him as his son. And that's the sort of, I think that's the sort of attitude that we really want in this place.
You mentioned your partner and new baby and all the work that goes with that. And it is work. It's also amazing, but there's a lot of work that goes with it. There's also something that I'm fascinated by, and that's, Georgie is not a Labor MP, okay?
She likes to remind me of that from time to time.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, yeah. I mean, her politics and what she presents is very different. Yeah. It's been weaponized against you. I've seen it online, particularly her views on Palestine, for instance. How does that work? A relationship, I'm always fascinated by relationships where the politics are not the same. I mean, you mentioned Anthony Albanese. Well, Carmel was a Labor MP, so there's a difference there, right?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I can only speak about my own relationship. You know, it was fascinating sort of reading about your own relationship in the paper, which was a new experience for me. And Georgie actually had a bit more experience of people and the public conversation around her of who she was, you know, and I think that's actually something that women have to face far worse than men often, is that people speak about you in a way that there's almost this internal misogyny or this internal ownership of the public as if somehow you're a product or a property of public debate. And people try to sort of make that a part of our relationship. It won't shock people, I don't think, too much to say, actually, we're far more boring than that. Like when we actually hang out with each other, you know, we one thing Georgie has got me into is watching Law and Order SVU.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, which I didn't do until she came into my world. And, you know, we just kind of hang out and we try and go to the gym together and we try and do things together. And, you know, we live in St Kilda and in her place in Kyneton, and we try and I could probably spend a little bit more time in Melbourne, but I'd try and help make sure she can look after her responsibilities in her electorate as well. And we're just a normal couple. On the politics of it though, you know, I really try not to interfere in her political world, and she's her own political person and she's a professional and she's really good at this caper and is a very good communicator. She's exceptionally bright and is a hard worker. You know, she'll sit in bed and be on a computer and prepare for Parliament. It's a difficult and different job being a crossbencher versus being
very different.
A member of the government.
But are in a party, Josh, that is so tribal. The Labor Party is so tribal. How does that land on the people around you? You must have had some raised eyebrows.
Well, as in, like, how do people around me care about the Labor Party?
Well, no, think about you in this relationship with the Animal Justice Party woman. Like, come on. Have you not faced a bit of a sideways look?
I think, like,
Fess up, Josh.
Honestly, like, Georgie worked for worked in the union movement. She worked in superannuation. She's, you know, she's obviously an animal justice member and is of the Animal Justice Party and cares deeply about AJP, which I respect. And she's not completely foreign to the world of Labor politics and is well liked and respected by a lot of people inside Labor circles. And I think, you know, a lot of her friends and colleagues inside the state parliament, predominantly where she works, you know, a lot of them are obviously the Labor Party, and she, you know, she understands the world of Labor politics. I think federally, you know, I think a lot of my colleagues also understand that Georgie has been someone who has been on the forefront of really difficult political conversations, and as someone who tried to change the perception of who, what a representation and what a representative can look like and can be, and challenging the stereotypes of a member of parliament, is something actually I think a lot of my colleagues have a lot of respect for. And I've seen her having to confront really difficult personal issues in a way that she has used her own difficult personal experience to try and push the sort of societal norms forward and challenge the societal status quo, of which something that I think that's a lot of Labor people understand. So obviously, yeah, like, you know, there's cross-factional relationships that some people would question and all of that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, most people understand that we're humans first, and you know, for the most part, I think people are happy that I'm happy and that they really respect her as well.
Is there a belief you've held strongly early in your career that you've changed since?
That's a really good question. It's not so much a belief that you've changed. It's one of the things that I think that you always have to challenge yourself on, and that I do grapple with, is the pace of change and how much you want to try and work within the system to create change. And so this is a classic conversation that we actually do have, is sort of in my own house with Georgie, is like, what's the methodology of change and how do you create change? And she's been really effective from the crossbench of creating change, but also I feel like I can do a really good job of representing people, getting things done in government from within inside the government. And, you know, I've obviously been in the Labor Party for a long time. I care deeply about the movement and the institution that is the Labor Party, but I also think it's a fantastic vehicle for change. Now, that sometimes means that you have to swallow what you want to say in order to know that actually having the experience and the relationships and understanding how government works, how people work, how culture works, how this building works, means that, you know, you can't just put out a list of things you want done in a day and say what you think and move on. You have to work within the systems of this place and try and push them as fast as you possibly can. But that means respecting your colleagues. It means respecting the views of others and working with other people in order to get things done. And that's, you know, one of the powerful things of the Labor Party, is that you hold off and you compromise and you work with other people, and then you all bandy together and use your numbers together in order to make that difference and that change. So I'd say, you know, one thing that's changed my mind, I think I've got a better understanding of how this place works and how to make change. And that sometimes means showing leadership and not saying the things that are on the tip of your tongue, but
right.
Actually.
So no, you're saying you've learned how to show restraint.
I think you have to in this game, and you have to in order to, you know, government can move very, very slow until it moves very, very fast.
Can you tell me something that you've bitten your tongue on? You're probably still biting it.
Oh, like I think I'll give you the example of like a really big conversation that's going on right now, is that, you know, we've got these national environmental laws that we're in negotiations with the Coalition and the Greens. Now, obviously, you know, obviously you have all of these viewpoints about this amendment, that amendment, all the things you want to do. You know, being involved in climate policy has been a big part of my time so far. But it doesn't serve my community to not be in the room and to not be able to have those direct conversations with the people who are really making decisions on this particular reform. So it's no point me going out there making all of these public statements about what should or shouldn't be in the bill. That's not going to help anything. It's not going to make change. What actually will be is working with people, working with Murray, who I respect a lot, working with my colleagues, working with the sector, and trying to actually move things forward in a way that hopefully we actually get the outcome we want.
What's the harshest criticism you've received?
I think the thing that was the hardest, you kind of touched on it before, was criticism from within the community you love. And for me, the Jewish community is, you know, it helped shape who I am, and some of the criticism that I got, and you know, some of the names and some of the stuff, that was really stressful. And you try not to listen to the noise, and you know, I definitely recommend politicians don't read comments on Facebook or on the Australian articles.
So there were, I mean, I know something about things that have been going on in your electorate too. There were like WhatsApp groups of people talking about you in the community, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, a little bit of that, you know. And people obviously don't see everything that goes on behind the scenes, and that's fine. I think there is a fair conversation and a fair criticism of like what can be done, what's the policies, what's all of that, to question your sort of intent and loyalty, and to question, you know, like what you actually want to do, and you know, do I care more about Labor versus the community and all that kind of stuff. Like that was so difficult, because I love walking into community functions. You know, these are people I've grown up with. I love saying hi to people. I love the sort of sense of community and the sense of camaraderie and solidarity that you get from all different parts of my electorate. And to sort of feel like that wasn't possible for a bit, or that there was a lot of tension in that. That meant there was tension in who I was, and that's something you have to really wrestle with.
What's your political epitaph? How do you want to be remembered?
From a value sense, I want to be remembered as someone who didn't try and do the divisive stuff, but actually tried to be a good representative who do things for our community, and to do things at a national level that hopefully improve the lives of people. And that when I think about my own family's journey, things like being able to own a home, have access to education, have access to healthcare, have access to the things that meant social mobility was possible, from the grandchild of people who left school at 13 and came to Australia with literally nothing, was able to then work hard. You know, my grandfather worked so hard, he did his back in his early 60s, but he was able to get a little place in Elwood, which now is an absolutely spectacular part of my electorate, and put my father and his brother and sister through higher education, and I was able to become a member of parliament, or my grandmother, who came here as a stateless person fleeing Nazi Germany and came to this country as a refugee. It's something that I still hold on to that, and I don't want to be a hypocrite around migration policy, which is something also that I care deeply about.
And you struggle with some of the hardline policies?
I'd say this, PK. I think that migration is being weaponized right now in political debate, and the antidote to that is a big reminder that we are a migrant nation, and that migrants help build this nation, and the hypocrisy of a lot of people to pull the drawbridge up when they too are products of migration as somehow some sort of scapegoat is a very dangerous political game. And so I think, as someone who is a migrant, who comes from a migrant family, who came from a refugee family, who this country has meant everything to my family, that needs to be defended and worked for. Now, government also needs to be able to have difficult conversations, and the mix-up of migration and what the levels are, all of that is a rational conversation, fine. But when it is done in a way which is weaponized and somehow scapegoating, you know, you don't have a home because of the migrants, or there's too much crime because of the migrants, or, you know, we need to... when the Liberal Party starts flirting with One Nation and the sorts of politics that One Nation is moving on, I think that is a very dangerous place. And the Liberal Party obviously is going through this internal conversation and combustion about working out how migration will be used. But at the heart of it, they need to decide, is migration a measure of government that helps helps think about, well, what sort of skills come into this country? Where's the economic needs? What sort of humanitarian intake are we going to have? Or is migration some sort of political weapon? And as soon as it becomes the latter, we've already lost. And I've seen it being weaponized in the United States, in the United Kingdom, and we cannot let that happen in Australia. And if people want to be hypocrites about that and to somehow pretend that they aren't migrants, they sound really silly and they should be called out for that.
Josh Burns, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Politics Now's special summer series, The Interview. All summer, we'll be bringing you the people behind the politics. So follow Politics Now on the ABC Listen app so you never miss an episode.